Welcome back to Via the Source, where you can get news about the entire NFL and, of course, the Miami Dolphins. Fins up, here's Steven, your host.
What is up, guys? Today's date is October 27th. I'm Steven Masso, and as always, you are listening to Via the Source. Today's episode is going to be recapping the game between the Houston Texans and the Miami Dolphins. This was another demoralizing loss. As we know, it was a very depleted Miami Dolphins team going up against a very healthy and thriving Texans team. Aside from Deshaun Watson being hurt, the Texans had all their guys out there. So let's get straight into this recap. The Dolphins faced the Houston Texans this Thursday night and ended up losing 23-42. The game was defined primarily by another poor outing by this Miami Dolphins defense, which allowed Watson to have more touchdowns, 5, than incompletions, 4. Now, the first half of this game was centered around poor officiating, and I'm not even saying that in the sense that it works strictly against the Dolphins. The game began with an illegal formation penalty on the kick return. I really can't make that up. The Dolphins were penalized on the kickoff, but it was on a punt return by Jakeem Grant when the officials clearly messed up. Grant was brought to the ground on this soccer-esque sliding tackle. It was a very obvious penalty that went overlooked, but the refs would kind of make up for it big. They handed Miami what I thought was a gift. It was an unnecessary roughness penalty that was called on a field goal attempt by the Dolphins. That penalty would give the Dolphins a first down. It would extend the drive and allow Kenyon Drake to find the end zone on a very easy 12-yard touchdown run. The Dolphins took the lead 7-0, but that would be Miami's final lead of the game because the Texans would go on to score the next drive. And after that, there really weren't many bright spots for the team. One of the bright spots, though, was a creative receiver pass where Danny Amendola threw just a dime to Kenyon Drake for a 28-yard touchdown. Really, it was a great throw. It was across the entire field. Another bright spot came on a pass to Jakeem Grant. He was initially hit as he caught the ball. It somehow ricocheted like a Madden glitch all the way to Devontae Parker, who was waiting for it. That was really cool to see. It was just really weird. A lot of weird stuff happening in this game. So let's take a little bit of a deeper look. Deshaun Watson, first of all, is a playmaker. He didn't need to carry his team to a victory, but he controlled the game. He showed an ability to make plays when there was nothing there, and he gets the overall game ball for me. He finished the game with 16 for 20, 239 yards, and 5 touchdowns. He was mobile. The defense wasn't able to get any pressure on him. He was extending plays and hitting throws when he needed to. He just looked very, very efficient and composed in the pocket. For a guy who had a collapsed lung and a broken rib, the pressure was needed, and he looked composed. It looked very easy for him out there today. Brandon Whedon also saw the field for one snap. So you know what? I'm going to bring in my Brandon Whedon expert to give his thoughts.
Well, if you want to know anything about a good Brandon Whedon, let me know.
It says here he had a carry for -1 yards.
Oh, yeah, he kneeled the ball. Wow. Yeah. Please put that in your podcast.
What do you think of his performance out there?
Very impressive. Very impressive. You know, if there's a lot of things that I've seen in Brandon Whedon, I know that a positive play is one that he's not sucking, and taking a knee is not sucking. Let's look at an instant replay on the snap. Look at the composure.
Okay, and I hope you liked that little analysis of Brandon Whedon. That's my friend Alec. He is a very, very good and professional expert when it comes to the one and only Brandon Whedon. So to get back on track, Watson had two main receivers in this game, DeAndre Hopkins and Will Fuller. Fuller was the benefactor of two massive plays. He caught a 34-yard pass in the first quarter, set up a touchdown on that drive, and then he caught this 73-yard touchdown reception where he kind of burned Bobby McCain. There was some miscommunication between McCain and the safety. It ended up being a 73-yard touchdown. It was huge, and he would finish the game with 124 yards and a touchdown. Unfortunately for Texans fans, he suffered a torn ACL towards the end of the game when he was fouled on a fly route. Bobby McCain seemed to wrap him up because he again kind of got beat. And this is the second straight week where I see Bobby McCain take down a receiver who seems to beat him on a route. That's not something I like to see. On the other side, you have DeAndre Hopkins, and Hopkins is really just that good. He didn't hit the century mark in this one like I projected, but he had an impressive game nonetheless. He finished with 6 catches, 82 yards, 2 touchdowns. And Hopkins only had 8 yards at the half. 74 yards and 2 touchdowns came in the second half. So the first half of the game, Xavien Howard really appeared to be winning the matchup between the two. I was vastly impressed. I was so excited by seeing that. that was a game ball performance in the first half by Xavien Howard. I really thought it was impressive what he was doing, but by the end of the game, it was safe to say the Hopkins would get the win. It was a valiant effort regardless from Howard, and you still have to be excited about what you saw in the first half. It shows potential. It shows growth. Hopkins is really just that good, the same way I saw AJ Green. So I would still give a nod of approval for Xavien Howard just because what I saw in the first half, it shows potential. Now, remember last week how I mentioned just how few passes Matthew Stafford threw? He threw 22 passes in total, the third lowest attempts in his NFL career. Well, Watson in this game only threw 20 passes, the fewest in his NFL career thus far. So again, why is that? The same reason as last week. Miami could not stop the run. Lamar Miller finished his game with 133 yards and an average of 7.4 yards per carry, and then Alfred Blue would add 42 yards of his own. So an NFL team, it could have the most dominant air attack in the league, but if they are able to pound the ball with ease, they would gladly become a run-first team. It's just really common sense. So the Dolphins have now given up a staggering 436 rushing yards and an average of 6.3 yards per carry over the last 2 weeks. That is not how a defense is going to win games. It's really as simple as that. Now, we switch to the offensive side of the ball for Miami. Offensively, I don't want to dig too deep into this, but Osweiler, again, he was all right. The loss wasn't on him. He was still far from great, but he really met the standard I would hold for a backup quarterback in this league. He finished with 21 for 37, 241 yards, 0 touchdowns, and 1 interception. So, again, Tannehill is still a much better quarterback, but is it enough of a drop-off that I would say Tannehill would have won the game in this scenario? No, it wouldn't give me enough confidence to say that. But then again, Osweiler is definitely a second-string quarterback. He made some horrible throws and ones that Tannehill would have made, but it is not enough for me to say, oh yeah, Tannehill easily would have won this game. It's just not that standpoint. Laremy Tunsil, he had a pretty outstanding effort against Jadeveon Clowney, really limited his effort in this one. Juwan James on the other side of the line was actually struggling with J.J. Watt a bit. He had 2 sacks in this game. And from the running backs, it was fairly a good performance as well. Frank Gore bounced back from that poor game against the Lions. He looked more like the Gore we saw the rest of the season finding holes. It's a really good ability that Gore has to find lanes and take every yard that's available. Kenyon Drake, he looked as explosive as he's ever had in this game. At the beginning, he was finding holes. He was bouncing to the edge. He looked a lot more fiery, a lot more explosive, like I said. But the widening deficit really forced Miami to move away from the running game, which was thriving, and I think that was when the game was lost. We were not going to beat a team with a good offense if we were forced to have the ball in Brock Osweiler's hands. He was just not going to be able to pull out a win for us. From the receiver standpoints, the Miami game ball would have gone to Devontae Parker. Parker had a huge game in this one. It really wasn't hard to predict, considering that the remaining receivers were a 5'6 Jakeem Grant, a 5'11 Danny Amendola. We knew who was going to be getting the ball from the receiver standpoint. Parker finished with 6 catches, 134 yards, and an average of 22 yards per catch. Now, let's go straight into my takeaways for this game. Miami needs to cut weight this trade deadline. That's my first takeaway. I personally thought that with Tannehill playing all season, Miami's ceiling would be sneaking into the playoffs. That is the absolute highest they could have got. And with Tannehill missing so much time and all the rest of the injuries, I think even sneaking into the playoffs right now is kind of a long shot. The team is an interesting situation right now. They have the older veterans. They have Wake, Gore, Rashad Jones, Sitton, and then they have their, you know, kind of in-between veterans, guys like Tannehill, Parker, James, etc. So I think the team really must choose to continue to either ride a train of what we have now. And, you know, these players are going to continue getting older. Their efficiency is going to continue to go down. Or they have to be sellers in this trade deadline and look for the future. There really is a lot of promise, I think, in the future right now with Raekwon McMillan, Minkah Fitzpatrick, of course, Jakeem Grant, Kenyon Drake, Jerome Baker, Kalen Ballage. There's just a lot of talent that is young, and I think you should really start to plan to build to the future. So I think they should be sellers in this trade deadline. The next takeaway I have is tap the brakes on Parker. And this one really goes both ways, because all year, fans have clamored for the trading of Devontae Parker. His injury issues frustrated everyone, including me at times. And this served as a reminder what he's capable of. He really has that upside. But then also tap the brakes, because this does not mean that he will put up games like this all the time. So yeah, pump the brakes both ways. No, Parker hasn't finally arrived as an elite receiver. Stills was out. Albert Wilson was out. There was nowhere else to go with the ball. Devontae Parker was going to get the ball. So tap the brakes there. He isn't an elite receiver just yet. And also, no, Parker isn't completely valueless. He's still somewhere in the middle of that. If the team wants to commit to the rebuild, then I think they should trade him right now while his value is at its highest. If the team believes their window of contention is still in the next year or two, then might as well hold on to him because you won't get all that much in return. And my last takeaway for this game is that Minkah Fitzpatrick needs more snaps. At this point, he really is one of the best players on the field, and being on 54% of the snaps is really kind of unacceptable at this point. Whether you are trying to win now or whether you're trying to get him acclimated to the NFL, he needs to be on the field at this point. There's just no excuses, because I get, you know, if you have a rookie and you don't have the confidence in him, so you don't want to put him out there yet, and you want to give your veterans who are more, well-groomed an opportunity, and you don't trust the rookie yet. But at this point, Minkah Fitzpatrick actually is one of the better players on this team, so he needs to be on the field. And honestly, this is at a point in the season where you should be getting all the young guys' shots. You should be getting Gesicki the ball more. You should be getting Minkah Fitzpatrick, Jerome Baker on the field more, because I don't know how realistic it is making the playoffs this season. So we might as well be giving these rookies an opportunity to learn, see the league, and they will be even better next year if we give them an opportunity to thrive this season. So that is how I'm going to wrap up this episode, guys. Let me know what you think. As always, you can follow me at Shady Steven, at Via The Source on Twitter. And as always, I will never bash you for your opinions. You can speak freely. I'd like to have an open conversation. A little quick disclaimer, a note here before I wrap it up, actually. I see a lot of these Dolphins podcasts who are so abrasive and so, they like conflict so much that you can't say your opinion without being called an idiot or without them saying that they know infinitely more football than you are. That is not how I am. I do not take so much pride in my opinion that I am willing to be demeaning or bash someone or call them an idiot just because they have a different sports opinion than me. This is what I'm saying. You feel free to speak what you think, and I would like to have a civilized conversation. That's just how I am. Until next time, though, I'm going to wrap it up. I'm Steve Amasso, and this was Via The Source.